This is just my little write-up, which we sort of explained before the break. Removing the germ, you make the grain product less perishable because it contains oils and fats. You can split the grain into three parts. So from a business standpoint, this is great because you have three different products to sell. And it's not like everyone is slamming back wheat germ every day, but consider that that might go to cattle feed. Right, so that would be added to other things that we might not see. Your all bran flakes, that's all they are. All bran, with some sugar. I'm like, man, this stuff is great, makes me poop like a champion. I'm like, yeah, I mean, it is all bran, so makes sense. So no major revelations here, more of what we were talking about before the break. So let's take a look next and see exactly what the nutrient losses are. Okay, so remember the bran contains most of the minerals, all right? This is a very short list. I might even add a couple things to this list. But look at the nutrient losses here. Right, 88%, 78%, 71%. Okay, so a lot of nutrient losses, because remember when you take the bran out, you lose the fiber, but you also lose the minerals. And here's the problem with refined grains, because if you look at your cell, and if I look at blood sugar, right, there's two things, well, more than two things to talk about. One, if I remove the fiber, I'm creating a food item that is going to raise my blood sugar faster, yes? Doesn't fiber slow down blood sugar absorption?
Yeah.
Okay, so if I remove the fiber, I now have a higher glycemic product, food. So this blood sugar, right, is gonna go up faster, which means it has to get into the cells faster, right? And we know that insulin is one thing that is gonna drive blood sugar into the cells, yes? Have you guys discussed some of this before? Yeah, okay. What people don't know though is you have other nutrients that are supporting here, right? One is chromium. Another one is vanadium, which is a trace mineral. You've got zinc, you've got B3, right, or niacin. These are crucial, 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 crucial for getting blood sugar in. So insulin comes and it's a messenger, right? It's a hormone and it says, hey, guess what, cell, like I've got blood sugar here, you gotta bring it into the cell, right? But you have a little receptor site that actually gets the blood sugar through. So you've got a little doorway. This doorway is made up of these things here. And vanadium, if you've never heard of it before, it's a trace mineral that mimics insulin. Okay, it's very similar. But here, what's not on the list is, no. You lose 90% of your niacin when you refine the grain. Zinc, lost 72%. Chromium, 87%. Vanadium, who the heck knows? It's a trace mineral. It might not even be in the soil in the first place. Can you see what's going on here? And I say this because we might sit here, we're preaching to the choir and say, oh, you know, but refined grains, I mean, not a big deal, right? The average North American is eating 146 pounds of sugar a year. That's just sugar. Let's not talk about the pastries. Let's not talk about the duchies, the donuts, the Wonder Breads, the sandwiches, the pastas. I could go on. That's what people eat, right? I've seen thousands of food journals in my day. That is what a lot of people are eating. Grains, 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 breakfast, lunch, dinner, right? And a lot of them are refined. So consider zinc deficiency is number 3 on the global deficiency list, right? So 3rd most common nutrient deficiency worldwide. An estimated 50% of North Americans are deficient in chromium. And well, well established in the research now, well established that chromium, I mean, the most research topic on chromium, in fact, probably the only thing, is its role in blood sugar. Like, everyone agrees that chromium is involved with blood sugar regulation. It's a no-brainer at this point. But another thing, when your blood sugar bottoms out, right? So I'm talking hypoglycemia here for a second. So you eat your refined grains, blood sugar goes into the cells really fast, right? I'm feeling a little bit hyperactive. And then an hour later,
you crash.
Something like 1 o'clock, people start getting blood sugar. When your blood sugar bottoms out, who kicks in? Who kicks in to pick up your blood sugar?
Insulin.
No.
Glycogen?
Glucagon.
Thank you. And there's something else? Thank you. So cortisol, so adrenal glands, yes?
I didn't listen to what you were saying.
Okay. Fundamentals, did you guys talk about this stuff?
Yeah.
Do you remember anything?
No? Yes, we did.
I'm just kidding. Okay, so when your blood sugar bottoms out below this sort of low line here, cortisol kicks in, and mm-hmm. cortisol stimulates the breakdown of glycogen. Okay, because you got no blood sugar now. Your blood sugar's plummeted. So cortisol stimulates the release of the breakdown of glycogen into glucose, yes? But what most people don't realize is for adrenal function, I've got B5 and I've got vitamin C are the main vitamins. And then I've got potassium, sodium, magnesium are the main minerals. Chlorine's in there as well. Okay, this is just a short list. But these are key nutrients here for adrenal function. So remember, if I'm riding the roller coaster every day because I'm eating lots of these refined grains and sugar and whatnot, my adrenal glands are taking a beating every day as well, yes? Okay, plus the stress, plus everything else that's going on. And look at the nutrients now, right? Potassium, 77% gone. Right, so this here, 77%. Sodium, no one really has a problem with sodium because we're getting lots of that.
78.
Maybe that's why you're getting salt cravings as well. So you get the salt cravings and the sugar cravings. Notice how those go together?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, craving salty. Oh, and then all of a sudden craving sweet. Magnesium, what are we at?
80%
gone. Kind of interesting when you start tying it all together, yes? And then we wonder why diabetes rates are going to triple in the next 20 years. Part of it anyway. But you know, that nutrition stuff, that doesn't really work. Yeah. It's all pseudoscience, yes? It's all hocus pocus. Get this. I read this in the newspaper. It freaked me out. They are now genetically engineering human cells to manufacture drugs in your body. No word of a lie. Yeah? So you can now, they're doing it in animals. So they genetically engineer your cells to produce just the right amount of insulin or just the right amount of metformin. They're experimenting mainly with diabetes. So that you can basically, I guess, do whatever you want. And the drugs are now being made inside of you, so you don't have to take any. That's like freaky deaky stuff, man. I don't know. That's kind of crazy. And now I also read, on a side note, that there's a vaccine for obesity. That infectious disease, obesity. I've got a vaccine that's coming out for that. Childhood vaccine for obesity, another vaccine for acne, I saw the other day as well. Glad I'm moving further and further out into the woods. It is crazy what's going on. I mean, come on, like, we can't deny the fact that the stuff, we're starting to move into like science fiction kind of scenarios here now. And I think to myself, those cells that are genetically engineered to make more drugs, what happens if they A, stop working, and I'm heavily dependent on that, or B, what happens if they go crazy and start producing more drugs and stuff like that? Like, that's not a quick fix, no? Oh, and it's controlled by your smartphone.
Stop.
Promise you. That was the thing. That was the last thing that I was like, you gotta be kidding me right now. This is crazy, right? So controlled by your smartphone, and I think to myself, can you imagine? You lose your phone. I'm on the subway and I'm like, oh my God, I lost my phone. And now my insulin levels are up or down or whatever, and I don't have my phone. Apple, I'm about to go to hypoglycemic. Crazy, man. Anyway, that's what's going on. So that's a little bit here on refined grains, nutrients, and so forth. And remember, we are talking about food processing with all of this stuff, right? So I'm just going to keep moving forward today, and we're going to talk about food irradiation for 1 second. The process of exposing food to a controlled amount of energy called ionizing radiation. Gamma rays, electron beams. I have a really, really good write-up, by the way, on page 198. It goes for a few pages, so I would strongly encourage you to just read that. I'm going to give you the short story here. Used to kill bacteria, molds, yeast, etc. in food. Increases shelf life by slowing the ripening and or sprouting process. So this is not, to the best of my knowledge, this is not mandatory. It's not mandatory, but they're starting to want to irradiate more and more foods. And they are starting to talk about irradiating certain organic products that are imported. They're talking about that. But right now, mainly used onions, potatoes, so wheat. Spices is a very interesting one. All spices that I know that are not organic have been irradiated. Something that people don't usually think of. And as I said, not mandatory in Canada. So next slide, I'm just going to give you a brief summary of what some of the health hazards are. And just, you know, just so we don't get all freaked out here, okay, remember that it's not these single things that we're talking about on their own that are necessarily going to do the damage. That's not what we're talking about. Okay? Not one of us is eating food that everything else is awesome and it's just irradiated and we're going to have problems, right? It doesn't work like that. So what I want to get across is that when you start combining all of these things together, and no one is really looking at it that way, no one's really studying it that way, because it's very, very difficult to study that. Okay, so some of these health hazards here, page 199, there's more detailed write-ups on each of these. But we have these URPs, which are essentially radiolytic byproducts. Right, no one really knows what the health risks are. They're still studying them. But once again, it just seems a little crazy that, you know, I guess we introduced this type of technology and we haven't really fully looked at it, and we just still keep using it. Damage to vitamin and mineral contents of food. Look at that, increase in food poisoning. Isn't it supposed to kill mold and viruses and bacteria to prevent food poisoning? But look here, it might also kill organisms that would otherwise tell us that a food has spoiled. So you might not know that it's spoiled because this organism's gone and something else is there. Just like we saw with the soil, when you start wiping out one thing here, other things start to happen, right? There's just like a bacterial or microbial balance that goes on. The write-up here in your course notes, just while you're writing, irradiation can actually cause food poisoning since treated foods may be contaminated but appear fresh. Microorganisms which normally cause meat to look or smell spoiled may be killed by irradiation. Yet hardier bacteria, such as the one causing botulism, may survive. And botulism in kids, like, don't even mess around with that, man. Like, it's no joke. Some organisms may even mutate when irradiated.
Yeah.
Just thinking like electron beams and radiation science and weird little bugs. Gamma radiation levels of facilities would be toxic to workers. Okay, so that's if we actually work there. Get that. Food can still become contaminated after irradiation, which is sort of a no-brainer. There's some really, really good points on page 200, by the way, which just kind of really make you wonder, why are we doing this again? Irradiation of poultry being proposed as a means for preventing salmonella food poisoning, when in fact only 20% of salmonella poisoning can be traced back to poultry. Most of it is actually traced back to tomatoes. There was a spinach outbreak. There's actually a lot of produce that's causing those salmonella outbreaks, not actually meat, right? Another one, second last point here on 200. Aflatoxin is a toxic and carcinogenic cancer-causing substance produced by a bacteria which inhabits damp grains, beans, and nuts. Aflatoxin poisoning is a major cause of death in Asia and Africa. Irradiation of this bacteria actually causes it to produce more aflatoxin. Building dry storage facilities is a more practical way to control this organism. I actually also think that in part anyway, aflatoxins are responsible for a lot of peanut allergies. Okay, in part, because peanuts also, the bacteria, when you look at peanuts, they come in the shell, right? And then that shell, if you've ever cracked it open, sometimes can have a musty, moldy kind of smell to it because of the way that they're stored, right? A lot of that aflatoxin. Of course, the vaccines and peanut allergies are another one. Anyway, I want to talk about vaccines. So, food additives. Let's talk about these three general classes here. Intentional. right? So intentional obviously means that we intentionally add these. Colors, preservatives, flavors, sweeteners, texture agents, processing agents. Yeah?
Is it true that you can add 31 items in a product before you have to label that it's in there?
What product are you talking about? Like food ingredients?
Yeah.
No, not to the best of my knowledge. So what, under 31 you don't have to have any ingredients labeled?
No, like if it's additive. Because I work at Costco, so I was told by someone there, they're like, oh, even if you have like 4 items on yogurt, sugar, I don't know, canola oil and yogurt, they can have 31 more items, but they don't have to label it.
I'm not sure about that, to be honest. I would be very, very doubtful. As far as I know, you have to put those on there. But the when you start combining things together to form single things, right, like our colors, for example, and flavors, they're actually made up of sometimes up to 2,000 different chemicals. So you're not listing all of those chemicals, you're just putting flavor. Okay, so a little bit different there. Point two here, chemicals from processing. We're not really going to be talking about this too much. These are things that are beyond our control. Metals, solvents, plastics, chemicals leached from packaging. And the last one there, which we've already discussed a lot of, pesticides, agricultural chemicals, medications, our antibiotics, our growth hormones, and so forth, and then environmental toxins. What we are going to be focusing on here for the rest of today is really our intentional additives, right? So what's intentionally added to foods for whatever purpose we're trying to achieve? Last time I checked, I forget what the total is. I want to say that we're close to 82,000 food additives that we use in total. From all, you know, antimicrobials to colors to whatever. I think we're at around 82,000. Here's the kicker. If you're eating lots of processed foods, how do you know which ones they are? You don't. It's very difficult to know what they are. So one of the first steps in cleaning up a diet is to really start minimizing or getting rid of as much processed foods as you possibly can. Because if you're reacting to anything in those processed foods and there's something that's made up of 1,000 ingredients or chemicals and it's labeled as one thing, it's impossible for you to know. There's not even any testing to figure that out. Impossible. Okay, so just to give you some sort of sense there. So let's talk about artificial colors first. Only labeled as artificial colors, not the specific chemicals. And you will see that. You will sometimes see artificial and natural colors. Or natural colors only, or artificial colors only. Most are coal tar derived. That's interesting. Make them out of gas. Most have carcinogenic properties. What artificial colors? Cut them out. If you want to go with something artificial, at least artificial flavors are a lot less benign. The artificial colors are kind of brutal. Involved in hyperactivity. So tartrazine, yellow number 5. Involved in learning and behavioral problems. Back in 2007, 2008, I was working with a group and we were investigating artificial colors particularly, but also some of the flavors and its role in ADD, aggressive behavior, all of that sort of stuff. Wow. Crazy, crazy stuff, man. And the thing is, no one, if you go and you start talking to a school about this, they're gonna look at you like you're completely bonkers. Right, and we have data, like it's like, here, look at the studies. Here, have a look at it. This is what it does, right? So, hyperactivity, learning and behavioral problems, we're now talking about ADD, we're talking about ADHD. And I'm not gonna stand here and say that this is the sole cause, I'm definitely not gonna do that. But, is it an exacerbating factor? Yeah, is it an aggravating factor? Is it making it worse? For sure. All right, get this. Ritalin contains yellow number 10.
Wow.
Plus sugar. Isn't that crazy? You know what most teachers will tell you that the kids are out of line? Yeah, after lunch. See, that's the most reported. The class goes nuts after lunch. Some kids are sleeping on the desk because they're hypoglycemic. Other kids are bouncing off the walls, beating each other up. And they're like, we don't know what's going on. So, the other thing with Ritalin, right, and I get it. Like, there are, I've met people where their children especially, they've done everything that they possibly can and they have to be put on Ritalin, right? The other one is now Adderall. Adderall is the Ritalin's like evolved cousin, if you will. And I get it, some people have to be on Adderall. I totally understand that. But no one is talking about what else is going on under the hood. If you have ADD or ADHD, there's three things you should be looking at, right? One is you should be looking at hypoglycemia. Yeah, blood sugar disturbances. Because if your blood sugar is going up and down, can you imagine little Johnny, bowl of Captain Crunch in the morning, right? And a nice juice box. And off he rolls to school, and he's coasting for the next 4 hours on that. Yeah, gets to school. Next thing you know, crashes at his desk. And now he's hangry, and he wants to beat people up. He needs to eat, right? And then what are you giving them at lunch? More of the same. Bouncing off the walls, yes? So that's one, is food allergies. Number two is food allergies. Right, so food allergies will have very, very similar effects. Food allergies will also, they can cause hyperactivity, they can cause, I mean, if anyone here, I'm sure that there's people with food allergies and sensitivities, you know that when you're reacting, can you concentrate?
No.
Can't concentrate. You want to take a nap. Right? You're just like, oh, staring off into space. So food allergies is another big one. And the third one is environmental or chemical sensitivities, which we're going to talk about over the course of the next two sessions. If you've ruled all of those out, and then you're still experiencing ADD, ADHD, I might then say, okay, that's a legitimate case of ADD, ADHD. Because when you start picking through the literature, you know that in the US that there's kickbacks for the schools to get the kids on Ritalin? There's kickbacks. Like if you have more people on Ritalin, the school gets money. And then what are they feeding them in the cafeteria?
Garbage.
Some of this is what they're getting, right? If you go look through the National Institutes of Health, right? If you look at the amount of prescriptions of Ritalin and you look at the actual true causes or true cases of ADD, you'll see that there's only about 5% of the population. But there is well over 70% of the kids who are on Ritalin or Adderall. This stuff here is one molecule away from cocaine, by the way. It's almost identical if you look at the chemical structure. And Adderall is now the new party drug on university campuses. Kids are selling off their prescriptions and they're crushing it up and snorting it. It's just like cheap coke.
My sister's son's teacher was actually suspended for a week because she recommended it to my sister. And my sister went to the principal and told her that because it wasn't the first parent. And like, she's on probation now or something like that.
What did she say?
That my sister's son should be on Ritalin because
he hugs
people.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, so what are we going to do, just medicate? Yeah, we're just going to medicate kids. Like, this stuff is psychotropic. It alters your brain. That's why it works so well. Like, I mean, Adderall, I tell you what, if you do a line of Adderall or you eat it, you will focus. It's engineered to do that. You will focus. It makes you concentrate. But you think about it now, if we're medicating like this, what happens if you're on? I got a client right now, I tell you what, brutal, man. I feel, my heart bleeds for the poor woman because she's 26 years old and she's been on 6 different psychotropic meds for 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
10 years, stuff like this. Ritalin is like a walk in the park for her. Okay, but on dopamine antagonists, dopamine agonists, SSRIs, SNRIs, the whole thing, right? And a lot of it was, yeah, she had blood sugar issues. And I know, because that's what I'm trying to help her with. Blood sugar issues, metabolic issues, adrenal issues, and so on and so on. But she just started getting medicated from a young age, and now we're trying to get her off the meds, and holy smokes, man. If you've ever tried to get off any of those kinds of meds, you want to shoot yourself. It's really, really bad. So I think to myself, these poor kids that are on this stuff from the age of 7 or 8, and then they leave school, and we can't understand why they're blowing rails and why they're partying. Yeah, it's like, I don't understand what happened. All of a sudden, he's into coke. It's like, dude, you've been giving him coke for the last 10 years. This is what you've been doing. And no one ever fixes this. No one's ever talking about this. Yeah, I've got a couple of kids that I've been helping with cognitive and behavioral kind of stuff. And I tell you what, it blows your mind when you clean up the diet. This is the kind of stuff that I share with the clients. I'm like, here, look at this. What about gluten sensitivities? What about glyphosate? What about sugar? What about food allergies? Clean it all up and just see what happens. That's all I'm saying. See what happens after a month. And sure enough, every time after a month, they're like, holy smokes, my kid is a different person. So it works, right? It's not just theory. It actually works. So that's a little bit there on artificial colors. If you have anyone with ADD, learning issues, anything like that, this is one of the things that you should really, really get rid of. Yeah, really, really get out of the picture. Next, preservatives. So we have our antimicrobial preservatives. Nitrites. Okay, the debate rages on with nitrites. Some people are like, well, you know, they're naturally occurring, so it's not a huge deal, which does make some sense. We are talking here about added nitrites. You ever notice that, like, when you put something, if you put a piece of fresh meat in the fridge, doesn't it start going brown? Just on the outside, it starts going a little brown after, you know, 2 or 3 days. You go to the store and holy smokes, it's perfect. So legally must be added to cured meats. They're starting to get around this now by using celery extract. Just as a side note. The celery extract works very, very similar to all of this. Can be, I want you to just change this, can be converted to carcinogenic nitrosamines in the body. Right? It doesn't happen in everyone. But obviously, carcinogenics, not good for you. Especially important for children and pregnant women. Okay, really, really important for kids to avoid this stuff. Okay, so feeding the kids lots of hot dogs and cold cuts in their sandwiches for lunch all the time. really something that you want to consider moving away from. Right? This your natural selections and all of these, you know, Beretta Farms now do cured stuff. So there's a lot of like of the good kind of meats that are being cured. But just when you look at the label, just, you know, some of them are still using nitrites, even though they're organic meats and whatever. But they're starting to use celery extract, and celery salt is another one. So you might see on certain labels that there's no nitrites, but you'll see celery, and that's kind of why it's there. Okay, so let's take a quick 5 minutes, and we'll pick it up.
Celery extract and celery salt.
That's right. Would you say that celery salt is a natural?
It works the same as the nitrites to preserve the color and all of that stuff. Yeah.
But it's harmful as the same.
Pardon?
It's the celery extract harmful as the same as nitrites?
No, it's not. That's why they're using it as a natural alternative. You ever wondered with dried fruits, when you dry out an apricot, for example, and you go down to the store, why is it still orange? Like an orangey yellow kind of color, right? But if you go and buy the organic kind, it's brown. You ever seen that? Yeah. Same thing with mangoes. When fruit dries like that, it's naturally going to change color. But consumers, when they think of apricot, they think of yellow-orange. So I want to see that in the dried form. So we add sulfites to preserve the color. And that is it. Naturally occurring in wine, all wine has sulfites. Shoot the messenger. Okay, all wine has sulfites. But what they do is they will also add more sulfites to the wine. And so you will see that there is no such thing as sulfite-free wine. It doesn't exist. You will find wines that have not had any sulfites added. And that's a little different. You will also find that white wine naturally has lower amounts of sulfites than red wine. Sweet. Switch over to
organic
to white.
Wines. Same.
What's that?
Organic wines.
Yes, yeah. I find that they don't add as many sulfites to them, but naturally occurring, they are still going to have sulfites. So if you're very sensitive to them, you might find that wine is just sort of off the menu for you, unfortunately. Okay. Can trigger allergic reactions. So note, they're not necessarily a cause of allergic reactions. Right, so especially asthmatics. They can sometimes cause airway constriction. Can reduce levels of important nutrients such as beta-carotene, B-complex, and calcium. This year, I'm not as concerned about that because I think that you would have to have quite a large amount of sulfites, and you would be having to, you'd have to eat them continuously. That said, if you were drinking 3 or 4 glasses of wine every night, maybe that's a slightly different scenario.
Like an alcoholic.
For the most part, people are not binging on dried fruits and, you know, fruit juice concentrates or whatever. So I think that the only thing that I would really say about this is, yeah, if you were drinking lots of wine, this might become an issue, but really, really hard to say. And I wouldn't say that it's going to make you completely deficient, right? I think it's a little bit of a stretch here.
Sometimes.
Can cause headaches, nausea, diarrhea, and irritated membranes, basically like skin flushing. You get a little red in the face. Okay, so don't really have much to add on top of that. Fairly straightforward. One thing that I will actually add to this, sorry, now that I'm thinking about it, is if you have issues after you eat from the deli section at the grocery store. Okay, so you go to the deli section. Notice how the food never browns. You go there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Stuff that was made this morning looks like they just made it 5 minutes ago, right? Okay. A lot of sulfites added to things like potato salads and whatnot. So even salads. So you might actually be getting things that are look great, but underneath it all, there's sulfites that have been added to preserve the color. Okay, so if that's you, if you notice that every time I go to the store and I buy something that's healthy and I still feel like, you know, headaches or irritated skin or whatever, maybe consider that you might have a sulfite sensitivity. Okay, and that's about it. Looking at antioxidant preservatives, and you can see here, we already spoke a little bit earlier about BHT. Okay, I'm not as concerned about the long names. BHA and BHT are good enough. These are preservatives and antioxidants used in many fat-containing foods, and they're vitamin E analogs. In other words, they are chemical cousins of naturally occurring vitamin E. Right, so they figured out, chemically speaking, how they could make something that looked exactly like vitamin E and behaved exactly like vitamin E as well. From a health perspective, can damage liver and kidneys and can also aggravate ADHD. Birth defects in animal studies, but I think that I would be very cautious of saying that something like that could happen in humans, because you probably have to eat a lot of it. And the possibility that BHT converts other ingested substances into toxins and carcinogens, and it has been banned in other countries, okay, namely England. What's interesting about this is that, just while you're writing, this is also used not just in the food industry. It's used in jet fuels, it's used in cosmetics, it's used in rubber. It's got a lot of like industrial applications outside of food, which is kind of odd. But it's also being investigated as a potential cure for HIV. That's why I say it's a really weird molecule. It's a interesting molecule. I think that part of it might have to do with the fact that it mimics vitamin E. It's the only thing I can think of. Right? So yeah, a little weird. In Canada, as far as I know, last time I heard, they banned BHT from being added to the food, and manufacturers started just putting it in the lining of the box. Okay, there's a loophole. Oh, we can't add it to the food. That's all right. We'll just put it in the box. It's now part of the box. It's fine.
Well, yeah. Just it was an ingredient in a lot of lipsticks as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was looking at products.
Yeah. So cosmetics, right?
Yeah.
Again, as an antioxidant. We'll talk cosmetics and stuff next session. Questions? Good? Okay. Ascorbic acid, I don't really have too much to say here. It's vitamin C, right? It's used as a food preservative. It's an antioxidant. This goes for supplements too, though. They're usually derived from corn. There's a lot of vitamin C supplements derived from corn. And of course, most of the corn, as we saw a few sessions back, is genetically modified. This year, I mean, I don't want to freak people out. I don't know, you know, you're not talking about extracting the protein part of the corn and putting that into a supplement. You're talking about isolating the vitamin C. So I don't know how far we would want to tie the whole GMO thing together with just the vitamin C component. You know what I mean? Just to not freak people out, that's all. But what I have started seeing is I've started seeing companies that are now labeling on their products that it's corn-free, on vitamin C supplements. Mm-hmm. I've started seeing corn-free or made from some other source, or I've seen non-GMO corn used. So, and that's very, very recent. I mean, that's like in the last few months that I've noticed that. So they're obviously cluing in that people are starting to understand this kind of stuff. Next on our list, natural sweeteners. So natural sweeteners, most widespread additive. Right, we're talking about sugars. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about aspartame or Splendor or anything like that. We're talking just about added sugars now. And by far the most widespread additive, added to all sorts of stuff. And did you know that salt and vinegar potato chips have lactose in them?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, so sugar added to things that are like salty. Peanut butter got sugar. Okay, so many things that you wouldn't think had sugar in them actually really do. Anything that ends in O-S-E is technically called a sugar. And of course associated with ADD, so that's ADD, ADHD, hypoglycemia, diabetes, obesity, candida. And the list could keep on going here. As we said, the average American eats roughly, I mean, I have to update the slide. It keeps on increasing somehow. Roughly 140 pounds of sugar in a year. And at the turn of the last century, so 1899 coming into 1900, definitely not 1999 coming into 2000. The average sugar consumption was 5 pounds in a year, just to give you an idea. I love how people are like, oh no, I don't want any sugar in my coffee. I'm gonna go with the Splendor.
140. Good.
But then I'm going to eat all of this processed food over here with all the sugar in it. It's like people who consume fast food and then ask for Diet Coke. It's like, okay. So, how to spot sugar? You don't need to write this down. If you want it, you can. This is... remember that these are natural sweeteners, right? So you're going to see things on here, like rice syrup. What's that?
No.
You're going to see things like rice syrup. Right? You're going to see things like maple syrup. You're going to see things like honey. Sugar is still sugar. Okay, obviously your maple syrup, your honey is much better than dextrose or high fructose corn syrup or whatever. So, but bottom line is they still are natural sweeteners to some degree. Okay, it's not aspartame, hasn't been engineered in that sense. So people always ask me, what about my sprouted, dehydrated, raw coconut sugar that was ethically grown on some island somewhere? Okay, it's still sugar. Right, it's still sugar, doesn't matter what kind of sugar it is. And I say that because a lot of people will switch out the simple sugars, your table sugar, and they'll just switch right over to something else and eat as much. Right, thinking that, oh well, it's all good. You know? Like honey, for example, has a glycemic index of 90. like if you're hypoglycemic or diabetic, you probably want to steer clear of honey because it spikes your blood sugar up almost as fast as pure glucose. This stuff here as well, high fructose corn syrup, holy smokes. This is like, they found now that cancer cells, it actually fuels cancer cells more than regular sugar. Okay, high fructose corn syrup. So what they've done is they've basically, again, they've concentrated, if you will, the fructose component. And this is sometimes labeled as glucose fructose. See that on the label, right? Glucose fructose. Now, one of the big things with fructose is that fructose has to go to the liver to be metabolized before it can be burned as energy. All right, so you eat it, liver has to process it, and then off to the bloodstream to do whatever. So when you, I don't want to say it's not genetically engineered, I'll say like when you process it to have more fructose in it, right, you put more strain on the liver. It's one of the big things with high fructose corn syrup, it stresses out the liver. But because it's fructose, it has a lower glycemic index than pure glucose. Anyway, and I'm going to lump under here something that is not on the list, but I would also, I don't know how I feel about it, is something called agave. Okay, agave. Every hippie bar in every health food store all of a sudden has agave in it. Yay! All right. Agave comes from cactus, and it also has very high amounts of fructose. Okay, so from a glycemic index perspective, agave actually is quite low. All right, it doesn't spike blood sugar super fast. You can actually eat a little bit more agave from a glycemic load perspective, you're all good. But agave is now starting to become the natural form of high fructose corn syrup because it's high fructose. So a lot of the same effects of this stuff here, we're starting to see with agave. I also don't think, not that I have a special place for cacti in my heart, but it's not sustainable because you have to kill the cactus in order to make the sugar. So with it becoming more and more popular, you know, cacti, they take a long time to grow, right? You can't just make it faster and you have to kill the cacti. So I just don't, from an environmental perspective, I don't know how sustainable this is. From a yeast perspective, your stevia, is that on the list here? No, stevia is about the only one that I know that will not feed candida. Right, so stevia, 300 times sweeter than sugar. It's like, I don't like the aftertaste. It doesn't feed yeast though, which is good, doesn't raise blood sugar. And super sweet. Right, I'm just gonna leave it at that for now. Bottom line here is with any kind of sugars, like total, you should really only be doing 3 to 5% of the diet. Okay, if you're gonna do it, I know some people are very, very anti-sugar. Keeping it very, very low in the diet is really the way to go. Yes?
What about sugar alcohols?
The xylitols and stuff?
Yeah.
I sit on the fence with them. From what it depends what perspective you're looking at it from. Okay, because
they're low glycemic index, but they cause digestive disorders.
They can for some people, yeah. And then you got to wonder, is it because of if there's any dysbiosis or is it feeding bad bacteria and so forth? So I think that if you can tolerate it, it's not a huge deal.
Yeah.
The amount that you're going to be ingesting, you know, if it's from gum or anything like that, is going to be pretty small. You know, yes, you can buy the xylitol powder, but it's that stuff's super sweet. You know, just like stevia, people are not putting on like 2 tablespoons of stevia on their cereal. Like it's like a little bit, you know.
I thought xylitol and sugar is one for one ratio in terms of sweetness. No.
Yeah, I think so. I've never used the stuff. I don't really like it all that much. Yeah. I prefer to stick with, you know, the maple syrups, the honey, the stevias, like that sort of stuff. It's a little bit more in line with holistic. So let's talk artificial sweeteners because it's a little bit of a different picture. So aspartame. story behind aspartame?
Yeah.
It was made in a...
madness.
Yeah, like a lab, right?
What's that?
Wasn't it found in a lab when they tested something they weren't supposed to?
That's part of it, but even the approval. I mean, there's leaked documents to show that aspartame was never deemed safe. And when it came time for the FDA to vote to put it on the markets, coincidentally, there happened to be three people on the board that said yes, three people on the board that said no. So they had a situation on their hands. Guess who came in to fill the swing vote? All of a sudden, the guy that was behind aspartame and the CEO of that company, he switched over and miraculously was now on the board for the FDA. He's like, yep, approved. And we've been trying to get it off the market ever since. You ever notice that the Environmental Protection Agency, the FDA, all of that, you notice how they're always chemical companies, then all of a sudden they're with the EPA. Cosmetic companies, then they're with the EPA, then they're back on the cosmetic boards. Then they're with an agricultural chemical company. Oh, now they're on the board for the EPA. The stuff just keeps going round and round and round. Like Trump's new person that he put in charge of the EPA. Brutal. Brutal. So, caused brain tumors in rat studies. These are the breakdown products, by the way. So aspartame actually breaks down into base components here, phenylalanine, which can be excitatory, just by the way. So excitatory. And the reason for that is that phenylalanine is converted to something called tyrosine. And tyrosine can basically go down to dopamine. It goes down to epinephrine. And goes to norepinephrine. Okay, these are all neurotransmitters. Which, you know, fine if you have adrenal issues. Or find if you have a thyroid problem, no big deal. But phenylalanine works a lot on the brain. Okay, it's a supplement, they use it as an antidepressant. Okay, so again, in the non-susceptible person, totally fine, not a problem. But if you have issues with that, it might be a big problem for you. Aspartic acid, aspartate, that's where the name really comes from, aspartate. Aspartate fits the same receptors as glutamate. Okay, so monosodium glutamate, MSG. Right, this fits glutamate receptors, and when you bind to glutamate receptors, excitation. Right, so you become very excited, very irritable. Wood alcohol. Wood alcohol, the hillbillies that are making moonshine, right? Oftentimes they'll be blind. They'll have issues with their eyesight. Methyl alcohol attaches to the optic nerve and causes damage to the eyes. And there's one last breakdown product here, which is called formaldehyde.
Yeah.
Right, formaldehyde. Formaldehyde is the stuff that they use to preserve dead bodies, and it has been deemed a carcinogen by Health Canada.
Aspartame breaks down to formaldehyde?
Yes, aspartame breaks down to formaldehyde. It should be lumped with these here. Okay, so phenylalanine, aspartate, wood alcohol, and formaldehyde. Formaldehyde is carcinogenic. There's other studies to show now that it's a neurotoxin, right? So aspartame generally, neurotoxin. And excites the brain a little too much. Next on our list is something called saccharin. They're wanting to reintroduce this, like banned in the 70s. And they are actually seriously talking about bringing saccharin in, which is ironic because if you've read the book by George Orwell called 1984, saccharin was a big theme that ran through the whole book. Anyway, if you haven't read it, you probably won't know what I'm talking about, but if you have, I think that we are living in 1984. I'm just going to put the last one up there. This is our splendor. Saccharin. Incidentally, why are we even using any of this stuff? What's the sole purpose behind it? Aesthetics. Say again?
Aesthetics of the body.
No? Oh, yeah. Oh. Inadvertently, yes. So, zero calories, yes? Zero calorie sweeteners. Chuckle a little bit because people are eating garbage and then they're using this stuff and I'm like, what are you doing? Any sense? Again, no offense to anyone. You ever seen people that eat diet food? Yeah, packages of processed diet food all the time. Dropping the calories down and hoping to lose weight. It's never gonna work. And if it does work, you are going to rebound.
I used to work for Starbucks, and I have this one customer. She used to always order like a triple venti latte, non-fat milk, six Splendas, vanilla powder, and like all the stuff on it. She literally looked gray. Her skin was gray.
Wow.
It was very terrifying.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So the Splendas, right? So as if, you know, sugar is fine on its own, but when you chlorinate it, you now produce a zero calorie sweetener. So chlorinated sugar. There's a lot of animal studies being done on this stuff as well. I just, you know, I've got into debates with people about artificial sweeteners and all that stuff, and I tell you what, I can't see any good reason to use them, to be quite frank. Because even people that are using them, it's not really giving you the desired results that you're looking for, right? If you're just adding this stuff to your coffee or your tea or your cereal or whatever, it's not really, if you're not changing your diet and not looking at it from a holistic perspective, nothing's going to change. You're still going to be right back where you were. Think about this for a minute. 5% of your sugar consumption actually comes from the sugar bowl. We'll say that again. The sugar bowl that sits on the table that people put into their coffee or the cereal makes up for 5% of your sugar intake. Which means 95% of your sugar intake actually comes from the foods that you eat. But people don't look at the 95%. They say, oh, look at the 5%. There we go, I'm doing great.
Does this artificial sweetener help for people with insulin problem or diabetes?
It was originally thought that it would help, but they're starting to show cracks, especially with this stuff here, that it's not really, you know, again, diabetes, you know, it's such a lifestyle thing and it's such a dietary thing that even if you just use this and you didn't change the diet, it wouldn't do anything. Okay? Because remember, this is only 5% of what you're actually eating. I met with a naturopath 2 years ago. American guy, the guy had degrees coming out of his back pocket. Like, I was like, whoa, dude, have you just been in school your whole life? Like, he's an older guy, like in his 60s, doesn't practice, doesn't do anything, but multiple degrees, multiple PhDs, and I'm like, I don't know where you had the time to do that. But anyway, really, really interesting guy. And he was telling me he was down at, there's a big diabetes hospital somewhere in the US where the whole thing is diabetes, right? And so he says to me, I went in there and I looked at the diets because they got the food chart and the pyramid and whatnot. And so he took one away and he took a menu away. So what people were getting fed. And he analyzed the whole thing and realized that the amount of sugars, when you break down all the carbs and whatever, was 40%, which was just the right amount to keep you diabetic. And then he realized that the menu was made by Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company. So they're making the food stuff here under the guise of helping people, but they're also selling the drugs on the back door. You know, when I talk like this, I've been speaking like this for a long time. And 10, 12 years ago when I would say this stuff, people were like, whoa, this guy's a little radical, a little out there, conspiracy theorist. And the more and more I keep talking about it, the more and more I hear other stories like this where I'm like, oh yeah, welcome to the party. It's actually not any theory anymore. It's a conspiracy. It is what's going on. And if you don't believe me, start looking a little deeper, because I tell you what, it's all about money and it's all about control. That's what they're doing. So moving on here, MSG, another good one. This stuff tastes awesome, by the way. You can buy it at the bulk store. It's engineered to taste amazing. Like, that's what the whole thing is. So it's used as a flavor enhancer. And this is not really a synthetic item, per se. All right, it's not synthetic. It is actually a sodium salt of glutamic acid, which is found in many food proteins. Right, so it's really just an isolated extract, if you will. Anyone sensitive to MSG? Yeah, a couple? Let me give you some foods that are naturally high in glutamic acid. Okay, and the reason why I say that is you might have clients or yourself where you realize that if you eat MSG, so you go down to the Chinese buffet and you feel terrible afterwards, right? So you've realized that you're MSG sensitive, but you're still eating other foods that are healthy foods, and they are, but for that kind of person, maybe they're not the right choice. Okay, so I'm just going to rattle off a few here. Tomatoes, mushrooms, peanuts are sky high. Okay, we're talking about glutamic acid. We're not talking about MSG here. We're talking about glutamic acid. Walnuts and peas. All right, I'm going to leave it at that. If you want to know more, like the real in-depth, go to a website called MSG Truth.org. MSGTruth.org. I love these people. I can never do that. I'll get bored out of my mind, right? They just research MSG for like 20 years. So it's just everything. Gotta love them. I couldn't do it. I'm just looking at some of their info here. Free glutamic acid added to preserved vaccines. Interesting. Huh. Anyway, go check out the website. Really good. What do we got next? Can be labeled. This is a really, really key point. There are many, many different names for MSG. Many different names. And because food manufacturers have known that people have clued into MSG for a while, they will label it alternatively. Hydrolyzed protein, you ever seen that?
Yeah.
Hydrolyzed pea protein all of a sudden. And you're like, wow, that sounds great. Natural flavoring, yeast extract. That's used a lot, no? The list of processed foods here, fast foods, it's like a page and a half. I'm talking roasted Caesar salad. How many people going into Burger King or KFC or whatever? Oh, I'm gonna get a Caesar salad, all good. Yeah, just got all the additives in there, right? Probably sulfites too. Acute reactions. So these are immediate reactions, include headaches, agitation, increased heart rate, very, very common. You might even have numbness and tingling, and has been linked long-term with obesity, diabetes, ADD, allergies, IBS, and depression. Again, if you have people who are suffering from any of these things, you might want to consider start cleaning up the diet. With MSG is MSG can actually induce hypoglycemia, okay, which is interesting. So it can actually eat the MSG, drops your blood sugar. And then when the blood sugar is low in a hypoglycemic state, the blood-brain barrier, right? So the barrier around your brain becomes more permeable. So it becomes loose. And then the glutamic acid goes into the brain, causes excitation and whatnot. Does that make sense a little bit? I know it's a little far down the rabbit hole, but. So hypoglycemic state, blood-brain barrier becomes loose. The glutamic acid can actually go in there. And not just that, what MSG also does, which is a key point here, is it shuts off the satisfaction signal. Yeah, so you eat, right? And then what it does is it triggers your brain to say, hey, you're not full. You're not full. Keep eating more. You ever notice that? I haven't been to a Chinese buffet, I don't even know in how long. You hear it all the time, right? Man, I went there, like, oh, I got my money's worth. I ate like four plates of food. I'm like, could you sit at home and eat four plates of food? There's no way. You sit there after the first plate, like, done here, right? But somehow you can just keep eating. Potato chips as well, like just throw them back. Here we go. Okay, so it's actually called, yeah, the Chinese buffet syndrome, believe it or not. That, when you start looking at that kind of stuff, right, it links a lot with depression, because serotonin is the hormone that controls satisfaction, yes? So you eat, serotonin goes up and says, hey, I'm full, right? Stop eating. Yes, there's leptin and ghrelin, but I'm not going to get into that. So you can understand by those mechanisms here how obesity, diabetes with the hypoglycemic, ADD, depression, really ties things together there. Okay, next on our list here is flavors. The largest number of additives can be 2,000 in total, and made up of 500 natural flavors and 1,500 synthetic flavors. Labels only require the distinction between natural or synthetic. So just like we saw with our colors, okay, it's only artificial colors or natural colors. And the key point here is the combined effects are actually not known. I want to be quite clear that these are not carcinogenic. Okay, like our colors, they're not carcinogenic. But have been associated with behavioral conditions and allergic reactions. don't really have too much more to say on this. Far less benign than the artificial colors. And why don't we, let's wrap it up there. There's a few more slides, we'll just pick it up next session.
It was nice talking to you today.
Okay. Yeah.
See.
Mm-hmm.